And good day, everyone. Kevin Finkel here with another episode of Magic: The First Pioneers. This is a podcast all about the Pioneer format, keeping our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm joined by my co-host, as well as a special guest this week.
And my name is Ryan Schwenk. I am the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo area of Japan. And maybe before we introduce our special guest, maybe I should just kind of talk about our idea for this week's show, like what I did and who we got. Does that sound good?
Yeah, I always love the process. So tell me why you wanted a guest and then lead us into a who's there and feel free to speak up.
Yeah, so when I first started, before Pioneer, there was Frontier. I was very competitive in that format and I did a lot of research. I did a lot of practice, a lot of playing. But recently I've kind of lost that competitive edge. So recently I've been wanting to get that competitive edge back, and how better to do that than to, you know, talk to somebody that, you know, is very, very focused on the Pioneer format. So went on Twitter, I asked people, you know, that if anybody was interested, and we'd like to have them come on the show and just kind of talk about more of the technical side of the Pioneer format to kind of help people improve their skills. And one person answered the call. So do you want to introduce him, Kevin?
Go ahead.
So Harry13 is his MTGO handle, and he's out of, I believe he said Glasgow, Scotland. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, so let's start off by just having you tell everybody a little bit about yourself. You know, just give us a little rundown of your MTG career, you know, finishes, accomplishments, anything like that.
Yeah, of course. So first things first, my name is Martin Porter, also known as Harry and Harry13 on MTGO. I've been playing Magic for close to 6 years now, I believe. Yep. Started playing at the end of Journey into Next, start of M15. So I decided I wanted to play. I had played competitive games before. I played Yu-Gi-Oh! As a teenager. I gave that up around about 15, and I was 22, and I decided I wanted to get back into competitive games. So I spoke to a well-known player in Scotland about what was the best game. He said Magic. Since then, yep, I've fallen in love with the game. It's something I'm very passionate about. I would say I'm one of those players that you can define as a grinder. So I play predominantly on Magic Online now. I used to play paper. I never quite got to the Pro Tour, but I was very close with RPTQs and the like. Recently, I made the finals of the Pioneer Challenge, split with my opponent. I've also top eighted numerous super qualifiers. I've top eighted numerous challenges, and I qualified for the Pioneer Showcase tournament, where my friend Nicholas Price managed to take it down. So he's going to the finals in Washington, whenever that may be. So yeah, and I've been playing Pioneer since probably the turn of the year, I'd say. Basically, I wasn't initially interested once Oko was printed. That card is extremely egregious. But once that card got banned, and the format seemed to be shaping up into a format I really looked forward to playing. Coincidentally, there was a Grand Prix Magic Fest tournament in Brussels, Belgium, which is quite close to where I live. That spurred me on to really get involved in the game, and you know, I fell in love with the format. It started out with blue-white control, and I've now played a myriad of various different deck lists. So yeah, and now I'm here on a podcast specifically for Pioneer.
Thanks for coming on, Kevin. Did you have any questions for him?
Well, yeah, you know, I wanted to, before we jump into getting too serious talking about Pioneer, you know, just kind of wanted to see, you know, if Ryan has been a little bit out of it. How do you feel right now? Is it a fun time to be playing Pioneer? You think the meta is pretty interesting, entertaining?
I think Pioneer, so of course the companions have completely warped the game as we know it. I think Pioneer is the only format right now, apart from Pauper, of course, but the only format where companions are legal that I feel like the gameplay hasn't been ruined because of them. I'm not going to say that I think we're better off with companions. However, at the same time, just from playing leagues and playing challenges, there has been a wide variety of decks available. So I still think the format is enjoyable. Do I think Pioneer mechanics should be changed for the better of the game? Of course I do. But for now, I've actually quite enjoyed playing the different deck lists that, of course, they have companions in them. But Pioneer is one of the only formats where I think there's like multiple deck lists that are very competitive, if not tier one, without the companion being involved in the deck construction. So.
Great. I mean, you said it better than I can. I think I really agree, and it's nice to have somebody else who's optimistic about where Pioneer is right now on the show. I really agree. You know, I've been quite enjoying the variety in Pioneer, and you know, everyone else is worrying about companions, and we're kind of just sitting here going, "Oh, this is fun. Oh, it's Alluris. That's okay."
I had a quick question about Magic in Scotland. I know the Scotland Magic teams in the past World Championships have performed very well. Is the Scotland not metagame, but competitive the players, the competitive level very high?
I would say it's reasonable. We've had a lot of good players in our time. I think have you both heard of Gary Campbell?
Yes, I think I've heard of
He
that name a few years ago, maybe on
was like one of the
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. He was like one of the oldest sure he'll love me saying this, but he was one of the oldest players to win a Grand Prix. He won the Grand Prix Birmingham, UK. And he's fondly referred to as the godfather of Scottish magic. Now, let me put it this way. So we were at he used to run a store back in the 90s, 2000s. So he got in right at the start of the game. And I remember one time, for some reason, we managed to get 36 Scottish Magic players over to Vegas. We were all there. It was wild. It was fantastic. But I remember he was at the Harry Rooya stall, and he ended up getting to speak to, I think the owner was there, and he basically discussed his Magic collection. Now, it would be like the Magic equivalent of walking into Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. When you see Gary's collection, it is phenomenal. So he discussed the possibility of him selling his collection. The owner of Harry Rooya said to him, "I will fly from Japan to Dundee, Scotland, and deal with it personally because his collection must be worth like hundreds in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, like multiple. It's insane."
Yeah,
So.
I've been into the Hialeah store. Their stock seems endless, and now I know why.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. But yeah, for the most part, Scotland. I think you'll both experience this as well, right? You'll get players who get to a stage where they become, good at the game, and they have this competitive drive. But as the years go by, and a lot of players realize that the sum of their efforts get them so far. However, to get to, the very upper. Like the upper echelons of the game, you need to put in so much time, and people have, full-time jobs, and I think they get to a stage where they don't believe that the effort it will take to get to the next level is worthwhile. So, I'd like one of my main goals in the game is to increase the competitive level of Scottish Magic. So, I'm also part of a UK team called Vanquish, and that is one of our goals as part of the UK is to increase the competitive scene in the UK. I mean, we've had good players like Autumn Burchett rise up the ranks, and we have a lot of strong and talented players. But I'm not sure. I don't know if the UK is less competitive than other countries. But yeah, overall, I think the competitive scene here is good. We have a very strong community. I think the Scottish Magic community feels a lot more, I'd say, tight-knit than other communities. you know, I see a lot of stuff on Twitter, and some of it's correct, I would say, but you know, there's a lot of people that don't seem to get on, and sometimes it can be quite a toxic environment. However, for the most part in Scotland, we're all quite friendly. We all know each other. It's a really nice community. I mean, I've met so many great friends from this game, and I wouldn't trade my experiences for the world. And, you know, I know my roots, and I owe a lot to the Scottish Magic community for where I am today.
That's exciting. Is Pioneer specifically any big over there, or is it more that you're on MTGO a lot more and that's why you're playing more Pioneer?
So Pioneer, I think it's probably as popular here as anywhere else. Like, it's one of these formats that, you know, I think people prefer Modern, if I'm honest, but I think that is because, you know, a lot of people, especially with Paper Magic, they have their pet decks and they play it at FNM every week. And Modern's been the FNM format of most stores. And I think, you know, if you say to someone, okay, here's a brand new format, you need to build yourself brand new decks for it and stuff like that. I think Pioneer, I believe it will take off eventually, but I think Pioneer for me has felt like Magic Online is, it's a lot more popular online than it is necessarily in paper. Would you guys agree, or do you have that same experience?
A little bit. I mean, I kind of, you know, I see someone like you who started, you were saying, end of Theros block. You basically would have in paper if you kept your collection almost everything that's in Pioneer now. So those kind of people, it's nice to have a collection that didn't totally rotate out. And that's where I think the paper has some advantage. Obviously, Paper Magic right now is a little difficult to do worldwide, but when that kind of comes back, I think that'll help Pioneer.
So, let me tell you how much I regret going to all the vendors at various GPs selling my bulk rotated standard cards that are now worth loads of money. On the flip side, I also found a random opened booster of Aether Revolt at the very back of my cupboard, and it had a heroic intervention in it. Nice. Which happened to be worth like $10 from like bulk rare price. So I managed to flip it at that GP Brussels, and it was great.
Yeah, I'm waiting for a Paper Magic to come back. I haven't gotten to go anywhere and sell. I've got a foil Inverter of Truth sitting somewhere, and that spiked like crazy.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
For me, I mean, I live in Japan, and if you remember Frontier at all, Frontier started here a couple of years ago. Hallelujah. Put that together. So there was a decent amount of people that played that, and a lot of people kind of held on to those cards, I think, afterwards, even though like there was no tournaments anymore. And when Pioneer started, we've had a pretty good turnout for events. I mean, right before the pandemic hit, there was more and more people going to Pioneer events all the time. So I definitely think, you know, they might be slowed down a little bit now, but once everything is lifted, I think it's just take off again.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think I'm hoping it does, because, you know, I spend most of my time playing online predominantly because I'm fortunate enough that I can consistently make a profit off playing leagues, playing challenges and stuff. But you really do miss the paper and friendships that you have with other players. And, you know, I just think it's more fun in paper. Yeah. And, yeah.
Losing is definitely better in paper than it is online.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And don't get me started on the Modo Scrybug. Even with an 80 card inverter deck, you still see the same card that's maybe two copies in your entire 80 card deck right after you scry it to the bottom. So yeah.
So you guys want to get started? Is that cool with you? Did you have anything else? Or
I mean, you don't consider this started? I'm enjoying
yeah but I mean like as far as my topic, this is what I was thinking. So I'm kind of trying to improve my my competitive skills from, you know, the low point that they've been recently. And I know Kevin, you test a lot, you play a lot. Maybe I can kind of be like the, not the beginning player, but, you know, like the how can I say, the protege here. And I'm asking you guys who are maybe not the masters, but my teachers for advice. Would that be cool with you guys?
Yeah, like, totally.
So like I'll just be basically asking the questions and then you guys can talk about it, you know, as much as you want. Okay.
Yeah, sounds great. What do you got as a question?
Okay, so
dive us right in.
You know, first question is more of a general question. Would you guys say that Pioneer is a difficult format? So like comparing it to like Legacy or Modern, you know, things like that. Or would you say that there's just decks that are difficult or just things that are difficult? So like, can you kind of tell me what makes the format challenging to some people?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pioneer is a challenging format. I would argue that, you know, there's difficult decisions, especially in perhaps Legacy, that you might not experience in Pioneer. However, the top decks in the format predominantly have a lot of challenging decisions, and the main deck that I've been playing a lot recently was Dimir Inverter Druths. I've been playing the Yorion version, and just with the changed companions, a lot of people found it really hard to adjust from playing the 60 card inverter deck to the 80 card, because, you know, the deck previously revolved around a full on combo strategy that, you know, you could mulligan aggressively to find, you know, your combo pieces, because the deck could run with such little resources. However, changing to the 80 card version, the deck performs differently because you're essentially more control with a combo finish. So you need to be slightly less aggressive with your mulligan decisions, and you need to play the deck essentially as if you would play a control deck, but your finish is the combo. So even adapting strategies from as the format rotates, there's a lot of thought process that goes into that, and it's also playing with and against these decks, because I believe Pioneer to be fairly polarizing in the strategies involved. So Lurrus pushes a lot of decks to be very, you know, hyper aggressive, like Lurrus Burn, that just, you know, just get you dead fast, versus the other end of the kind of the format where you have Yorion Inverter of Truths, you have Lotus Breach, you have Garuda combo as well. Like, you have a lot of decks that are very different in the way that they're constructed and their plans. You know, I don't tend to see a lot of mid range decks do well in the format right now. One deck that I think is reasonable is either, you know, Sultai Orion or Bring to Light. There's a player, I believe they're called Japanese Fishermen on MTGO. They seem to consistently put up very good results with it. But outside of that player specifically, I tend not to see the Bring to Light deck perform as well as, say, last format. It had more of a presence. But yeah, one thing I would note about Pioneer right now is, you know, it's very polarizing, so you need to, a lot of the challenges come into, you know, how do you construct your deck and sideboard with that in mind? Because so, people tend to... Oh, sorry.
No, yeah, you can finish. I thought you were finishing up there.
No, okay. So basically, the challenges, I believe, is like the sideboard, how to develop your sideboard with this in mind. You know, instead of doing a tick all the boxes sideboard, you can... Maybe it's better to plan your sideboard specifically against, you know, these polarizing strategies. For example, playing Yorion Inverter, a lot of your sideboard now gets taken up with anti-aggressive cards, like Collective Brutality is an interesting one because, you know, it has the versatility to be able to deal with creatures, life gain, which is very important, and also interact with, you know, control decks that by taking instant sorceries out of their hand. So yeah, it's format brings up a number of potential tricks that people might not be aware of if they're new to the format.
Yeah, I think you brought up a lot of good points there. I really liked what you kind of said about companions bringing a little bit more complexity to the format right now. It's not something I had thought about, but I mean, Yorion especially, you kind of have to think about setting them up, getting the most value when you blink. Even when you're planning out what's going to be your Lurrus turn, the turn you want to Lurrus plus something else, that takes some setup, takes a little bit of planning. You don't want to do it too soon into a sweeper. You kind of prefer it as like a post-sweeper, rebuild your board. So that's interesting. The couple things I wanted to say on the point of, is it a difficult format? I think the two things that do make it a little bit more difficult is that there is interaction. Every single deck has ways to usually remove creatures, to stop spells maybe, you know, something that's affecting the board, you know, at least in some amount of turns. Like maybe there's some rare exceptions where they're just trying to win with their combo plan, but even the combo decks are rather interactive in this format. And that makes it complex because you're actually doing things, you're affecting your opponent's cards, and you have to make those decisions on when you do that. And then the other thing that really kind of adds some difficulty is the fact that there aren't really any free roll matchups. So if you think about an older format, there's plenty of matchups where it's like, okay, I auto win or I auto lose this matchup, and it's not going to matter much. You know, if the game matters, maybe it's about this sideboard card, whether I draw it or not. And I don't have to pay too much else, you know, make all these decisions about what else is going on. It's I'm playing this burn creature and swing its face. Or like, you know, I think of something like Infect versus Tron being very, very one-sided about whether or not there'll be a game there or not. So without any of those kind of free rolls, you really do have to be focusing on every matchup. It helps to learn all the decks in the format because you will be interacting in different ways with each one of them. And there's fewer sideboard cards that will just completely shut down a deck on its own.
Yeah, those are some really good points. I'm going to say that I totally agree with that. And it can be quite frustrating for me who's trying to grind Pioneer Leagues because, you know, you're trying to work out, is there a best deck? Is there a best deck in this format? You know, I like, as much as I hate having a quote best deck, I kind of like it for grinding purposes. But Pioneer, there isn't. I would not say there's a best deck in the format. That's what makes a format healthy, I guess. You know, there's a multitude of, and it also makes it complex because having a multitude of decks that are viable can give a lot of players decision paralysis because they're like, oh, what deck should I play on every given weekend? Well, there isn't a really good answer for that. And that's why, you know, the thought process into how you build your sideboard according to what you perceive the method to be and the research you need to put into understanding what each deck is trying to do over the three games against whatever strategy you try to play, you know, that's challenging. That takes a lot of, you know, it takes a bit of time, research, and, you know, reps, getting the reps in and the format.
So I was going to say one thing about Pioneer being a difficult format. Would you say that Pioneer's, like, deck building, when you build a deck, is it more of a layered approach, you know, as far as, you know, you're not really going all in on just the combo, but you kind of have a backup plan to, you know, your main win condition? Whereas, like, I kind of feel like when I played Legacy and Modern in the past, it was very, very linear as far as, you know, you had a lot of strong cards that you could use to protect what you were doing, and it all came down to, like, the power level of cards. But, you know, like, you know, if you had, for example, like Force of Will and Legacy, you know, basically games became like a battle between who had the last counterspell, like that sort of thing. So would you say Pioneer is a little, like, you know, like Kevin said, a little bit more layered, a little bit more, you know, there's, how can I say, different threats to take care of?
Yes, I would say, if we're referring to, you know, Pioneer has a lot of strategies. I'd say there's only one strategy specifically that's pretty much all in, and that would be Lotus Breach.
Yeah,
Lotus Breach is all in on the combo, and, you know, that's the only strategy I can think of. And fortunately for that deck, most of the disruption can be answered with an enchantment removal spell. Mm-hmm. Welt is very effective. However, that deck also suffers from its worst matchup is itself. Sometimes it just doesn't come together.
Mm-hmm.
I think overall, Lotus Breach has Lotus Breach is almost like the definition of Pioneer in deck form. It can beat any deck, but any deck can also beat it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes Pioneer really interesting. It's still not solved. There's still possibilities for, like, last weekend, that Intel Artifact deck, the white Intel Artifact deck, put up a very strong result in the challenge. I think it was piloted by Oscar Christensen. And Andrea Mingucci's had good results with it as well. But that's an example. And the week before, Abzan Rally came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
it was really interesting because it just showed you that the format is always evolving. And every time I play a league, I'm still facing new archetypes. I played against Abzan Luris Hardened Scales the other day. I thought that was really cool. But that's just an example of, you know, people try to, you know, solve the format, work out what's going on, what is the best deck. There's, like you said, there's so many layers to the format. There's no, you know, you can't simply just go all in on the mere combo. You have to have a backup plan because if people want to beat you, they will try very hard to beat you with various different, you know, Gideon's Interventions and other cards. So you need to have some sort of backup plan.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, Blue-Black Inverter is a good example. They can just straight out win with the combo, or they can just hit you with the 6-6 flyer in the air. So there's a lot of different ways for them to win. And then, of course, they have Thassa's Oracle, plus they have Jace, so there's different ways for them to win. I was going to say, is it okay to move on to my next question, unless you guys had anything else you wanted to add to that? This is kind of similar, you know, we were talking, you know, about, you know, companions and sideboarding and stuff like that. My next question is, what kind of mistakes do people commonly make in the Pioneer format? So from the games that you've played against people online or in paper, what mistakes do you see people make from time to time that, you know, are kind of, you know, how can I say, easy for you to notice?
Okay, so first things first, with regards to this new format, people that show up to a game without a companion, if they're not playing Lotus Breach or Inverter combo, I think that, you know, although, as I've said, I don't believe the companions have ruined the format like some other formats, I still believe that for your deck to function and have a strong win rate, if you're not playing a combo strategy, it's going to have a negative impact on your enjoyment in the format. It's going to have a detrimental effect on your performance if you're not playing with a companion if you don't tend to play a combo deck.
Do you think that's just people are underestimating the power level, or do you think that that's just people being like, oh, I don't want to do what's meta, I don't want a net deck, I'm going to do something that isn't this because it's popular?
Yeah, I think it's people just wanting to force their preferred strategies regardless of what the meta game looks like. And As much as I respect people that want to do that, you know, it's your game, you can do whatever you want. If you want to just have fun, that's completely fine. But I wouldn't show up to a competitive event with a non-Breach Inverter deck, you know, without a companion. You know, like, as I said before, I don't believe Pioneer right now is a place for mid-range decks to exist. Closest one I would say that I think is definitely viable is Blue-White Devotion. However, that still has the Heliod-Ballista combo package in the deck. So that, I mean, is that a mid-range deck or is that a, you know, it's kind of hard to work out.
Everything's mid-range or nothing's mid-range. Although maybe, what do you feel about the kind of the Jund Luris deck? You know, Kroxa, Cheville, that kind of deck.
For me, I just don't think it's powerful enough. I don't think the engine is powerful. I feel like you're playing Magic on hard mode, right? I feel like you're having to spin your wheels, do a lot of, you know, it's a very difficult deck to play. You need to know when to play Lurrus, what exactly are you going to bring back with Lurrus. There's a lot of decision making. And I just don't think Kroxa is the same power level as Uro in terms of the Titans. I think, yes, it gives you access to a very powerful, you know, creature for your end game, considering the limitations of Lurrus. I would play that deck if I felt like there was an exceptionally high level of Lurrus burn in any given tournament, because that deck has a solid matchup against Lurrus burn.
Yeah.
But apart from that, if there's going to be lots of people on Breach or Inverter or normal levels of people playing Inverter or Breach, I just don't think the deck's powerful enough. And that's even with playing a companion, you know.
I was going to say, in the same vein of, you know, playing with a companion or playing not with a companion, when we were talking the other day, you said sideboarding also kind of comes into this, as far as like how to side in against like a companion deck or a non-companion deck.
Yeah. So mistakes that I was discussing with you before was that people playing against Inverter that have access to white, bringing in Rest in Peace postboard, no longer viable to do that, because very rarely will you now see people playing Jace Friend's Prodigy. And that, if I was playing blue-white control, for me that would be the worst card to see on turn two, because blue-white has very little ways to deal with it. So before the companions came into the format, I believe that it was justified to play Rest in Peace against Inverter, because not only did they have Dig for Time, they also had Jace Friend's Prodigy. However, now that they no longer play it, they're essentially playing a 2-mana, Pithing Needle against Dig for Time. Sorry, 2 seconds. Pardon me. You're essentially playing a 2-mana Pithing Needle that stops your opponents from playing Dig for Time. However, it also enables your opponents to play the combo, the one turn combo kill. All you're essentially doing is forcing your Inverter opponent to sequence how they play the combo differently, as opposed to actively, you know, it's not a silver bullet, so I would not bring it in. Also, the companions alter deck construction, not directly but indirectly, with the cards that are now playable with the companions. A card like Trial of Ambition makes previously strong creatures like Dream Trawler almost unplayable.
What's that card again, the Trial of Ambition?
It makes the opponent sacrifice a creature, and it can come back to your hand if you play a cartouche, but nobody does that. They just can blink and it's a... I was going to say that sideboarding is also the place I would have gone first, as far as where a lot of people make mistakes, I think. Building their sideboards and how they're actually sideboarding. I think one of the biggest, easiest mistakes is just trying to answer one dimension of a deck and not thinking about the fact that they have backup plans. So you're kind of talking about that with Inverter, but if I think about, you know, if they're bringing in so many answers for the Ballista combo and they just get run over by an aggro plan, or like if they're, you know, bringing in every single option to stop Lotus Breach, but if they play an Ugin, they just are never beating that, something like that.
Yes.
I find that's an often problem.
Yes, it's kind of like the level one sideboarding, isn't it? And you just get outplayed because, you know, someone has a level two sideboard strategy against you, and you just don't quite get there. And I would say it's also, like you said, like the backup plans, like Ugin, like Inverter, you know, dancing around the Rest in Peace. These are big problems, and it's also the same for, you know, Lurrus burn decks or just Lurrus decks in general, you know, where people overload on spot removal.
Yeah.
And you're just trading one for one whilst your opponent just then brings down the Lurrus and has that, you know, engine to keep going which previously they didn't have access to.
And at the same time, I've also seen people bring in Rest in Peace against Lurrus Burn because they're thinking, oh yeah, it's Lurrus, it's a graveyard deck, I've got to stop that. But that's focusing on one single card, and you know, if you could just kill Lurrus, then you don't have to worry about their graveyard at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other part about that, with as far as sideboarding, is that yeah, I feel like people sometimes will bring in two generic answers. I don't think that it's quite like maybe standard where you can just be like, oh, this is my... these are the cards that I bring in against five different controlling decks, or these are my grindy cards, these are my anti-aggro cards. I don't think it's quite that black and white. Like, I've seen a lot of generic things like Pithing Needle that people will bring in, and they'll bring it in a whole bunch of different matchups, and it's not really very good in any of those matchups. So it's kind of awkward. Like, I don't feel like there's quite as many catch-alls, so it might be better to just play one thing that would actually be really good against, you know, bring in your, what's the one that exiles three, or enchantments, play that against the Heliod deck instead of trying to Pithing Needle that deck, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Barrier Breach is a very good one. Yes, I'm not a fan of cards like, I remember at one point people were playing Gideon's Intervention, and honestly, the rate on that card it never impacted the board or anything. It was just one of these cards that I just never understood why people would play. I totally agree with that. Cards like Pithing Needle, Elder Spell as well. Like, and it's people, and it's so when you're playing decks with like Yorion, people play, you know, one offs in their sideboard. You can't do that. You can't do that with an 80 card deck. You need to have, you know, there's, like you said, there's not many catch alls. The only card I would say that kind of works like that is Damping Sphere against Breach, like as a two of. But for the most part, I think you need you need to really be mindful about how you sideboard and the backup plans that you have to be aware of the backup plans that players have in each strategy, and you know how to best go about that. So as a rule of thumb, if you're playing a blue deck in Pioneer, you really need to be playing four Mystical Disputes in your sideboard. It's almost unilateral. That's one of the most important sideboard cards.
Yeah.
Some sort of graveyard hate. Soul Guide Lantern is quite popular right now. Rest in Peace in white is obviously very good. And if your deck is soft, the Lotus Breach, then you want to consider 2 to 3 copies of Damping Sphere. For sure.
I had one more question that I wanted to ask you guys real quick, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So one of the ideas that I had when I was coming up with this theme, I was looking back to the older formats and thinking about how people kind of, I guess sequencing would be a good way to describe it. For example, in Legacy, if you're playing Brainstorm, when do you fetch? Or, you know, I guess in Modern, we have like Bolt the Bird, or, you know, when you turn one thought, sees what do you take? Are there mistakes that people make with sequencing in Pioneer that are kind of similar to that?
Definitely a few. One I can kind of think of, I mean, this is standard too, is they'll kill a Planeswalker right before Elspeth's Conqueror's Death ticks up, or they'll kill a creature, giving them a nice Lurrus turn when they didn't have anything that they could have brought back with Lurrus previously. Maybe something like that. Those seem obvious. I don't think of anything quite as skill intensive as like, oh, knowing when to save your fetches, or like what to name with Cabal Therapy.
Yeah, there's nothing because Pioneer is still quite diverse. There's no, you know, there's no essential unilateral rule of thumb, I would say, as such. Previously, it was Well, I'll give you an example. If you're playing a deck with, you know, spot removal, efficient spot removal like Fatal Push or Shock or something like that, that maybe, well, Shock probably less so, but say Fatal, you're playing a Yorion deck, and your opponent reveals a Lurrus, there's a high chance they're on burn, and there's a high chance you're going to have to mulligan to a hand that can efficiently deal with their early threats. So I think a lot of it is your mulligan decisions are, I would say, very important in Pioneer. You know, you can, you know, because it's so polarizing, I think the mulligan decisions are very important because, you know, your keeps against any Yorion, like, inverter control deck is going to be massively different to what you'd keep against knowing that you're playing against a Lurus deck. Because it's, you know, 4 times out of 5, it's going to be the Lurus Burn deck or Lurus Feather, Boros Feather deck. So, like, I think a lot of the mistakes people make are either being conservative with mulligan decisions or just, you know, yeah, just not keeping the correct hands or just not knowing what
the
cards...
matchups well enough, maybe.
That's yeah, a really exactly. Keeper Mole is really interesting right now because Pioneer plays a lot of different companions and they're all pretty viable. You know, Lurus is probably the hardest of those because there are a lot of decks. I guess they're all creature decks though, so it's reasonable to think you got to keep some creature interaction. But like if your opponent reveals Yorion, that tells you a lot. If they reveal Obosh, you've got some idea what's going on there. You know, if they're revealing Gigantha, if they're revealing Zerda, those tell you some things.
Yeah, for sure.
I was going to ask one more thing about this before we move on to the next topic. As far as sequencing, when you're playing like a Sultai Delirium deck or, you know, some other green black deck, for example, you have Abrupt Decay or Assassin's Trophy, or if you're playing a black deck and you have like Fatal Push or, I don't know, a Downfall or the Murderous Rider. So do you think people make mistakes with what removal that they use? Like, do they not use their removal in the correct order when they play Pioneer? Is that a common mistake?
I think that is a common mistake. I think blue-black inverter is the one that really comes to mind. I see a lot of downfalls killing something like a creature and then not being able to answer a Gideon later.
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah, I would agree with that. It's kind of like not really using Life Total as a resource in these... Kind of, sometimes people forget and they're also a control deck and their Life Total as a resource and, you know, just not being that efficient with mana in terms of sometimes being inefficient with mana with the removal spells, but yeah, also not realizing, you know, you've only got 2 heroes downfalls in your deck and you know your opponent has access to Gideon of the Trials and you're trying to set up for a combo kill. Yeah, you should really should be very mindful when you decide to use that hero's downfall. Okay. And yeah, I think other mistakes I see a lot are, you know, people, it all goes back down to, it all comes back down to not keeping updated with the meta. And, you know, most control decks now all play center and it's just people not playing around center or, you know, like they have a Mystical Dispute in hand or against a white deck and they could shock in their Hallowed Fountain but choose not to and their opponent slams Gideon of the Trials. Gideon of the Trials is a difficult magic card to get off the board once it resolves in most blue, for most blue decks. So it's little things like that, like not really thinking about all the plays their opponent can make on any given turn.
This kind of leads into my next topic then. So we had all these mistakes that we were talking about. So what advice or tips would you have for people to fix these mistakes? Or do you have any general advice that you could give to people playing Pioneer? So we talked about sideboarding, we talked about the companions, we talked about sequencing. So what kind of tips or advice would you guys have?
Some of the specific ones, I think we've been kind of going over them as we say them, just saying, you know, don't do this, don't do that. I think overall it's going to come down to, you know, play with people that will give you feedback after, you know, review your games. If you're recording them, if you're streaming them, that's great because then you can go back and really watch your games, see what went wrong. And, you know, that's the biggest thing is being able to look at and critique your own play. You know, that's general. All of Magic will improve you. And then, you know, see what other people are doing in Pioneer. See what isn't working. See, you know, try and identify what lost you a game.
Mm-hmm. My advice would be don't underestimate the complexity of certain archetypes. So my team captain, actually, up until, I think, a month or two ago, I was almost exclusively playing blue-white control and Pioneer, and my captain said to me, you know, why don't you play Inverter? Like, that's probably the best deck to play. And I was like, yeah, I should play it. and I started grinding leagues, and I was not even, I was going 2-3 and stuff, and I was just couldn't understand, like, why am I not getting these results? And I'm a predominantly blue-based control kind of player. You know, I play, you know, I feel very confident going into any control mirror. I always feel good about it. But this was one of the first decks in a while that I couldn't really understand straight away. But, you know, after numerous reps, talking to people who had experience with the deck, I think a couple of weeks ago I was 11-0 in the mirror and beat the mirror twice to, you know, split the finals of the Pioneer Challenge. Like, I've got a very good grasp of the deck. And looking back, I would say there is a lot of complex strategies and, you know, try and find like-minded people who are willing to, you know, do some practice with you 1v1 on MTGO or something and, you know, discuss your thoughts on, you know, certain matchups and see if you come to the same conclusions. Another thing I would suggest people do is have, if you have a friend or a teammate or someone, try just play a gauntlet. Just practice with a gauntlet. Try a bunch of different strategies. I mean, if you're lucky like myself, you can have access to, you know, rental services for MTGO. Mm-hmm. Play different decks, because a lot of players out there will realize after, you know, coming into a new format, they'll realize patterns of, you know, what's working and what's not working in terms of sequencing and decisions, and, you know, what decisions are very important. Be mindful that in Pioneer, a lot of decisions are the first five turns. You know, it's still a relatively fast format in terms of what decisions matter and can make or break a game. So yeah, just do your research, go on, you know, MTG Goldfish will give you the metagame breakdown, look at some of the top performing decks, archetypes, and see if you can see any patterns. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just get a good grasp.
So when we were talking the other day, another thing that you brought up was knowing your weakness. You said that was really important in this format. Can you kind of explain a little bit more what you meant when you said know your weakness?
Yeah, so it's for me, it's kind of like Pioneer is it can give you kind of what you want in terms of the game. Like, if you see yourself as a control player, there's, you know, blue white control, Lotus Breach combo, Inverter Truce. You know, if you like aggro strategies, you've got Lotus Burn, Lotus Jund, you've got Hardened Scales, you know, and if you want to play mid-range strategy, you've got, you know, Bring to Light with Yorion, you've got Blue-White Devotion. You know, these are kind of more mid-range strategies. You know, there's something out there. And for me, and I think a lot of pro players say it as well, it's like, understand what aspects of the game you enjoy and start off with that. Play to your strengths. Because Pioneer, like we discussed, and there's no, you know, polarizing matchup. There's no Infect versus Tron. You know, you can win your unfavorable matchups in this format. So yeah, try a strategy you think you will enjoy and play to your strengths and go with that. You know, knowing your weaknesses, like I said, like, feel like naturally you tend not to play control, or you feel like you're not very good with it, then maybe not try not to play Inverter straight away just because people think it's a very strong deck. You know, try and come in with strategy that you think you'll enjoy.
And like you said, knowing the meta, understanding the meta, you know, learning the meta is very important too, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's crucial. It's crucial in Pioneer. It still changes from week to week. Somehow it still does that. So yeah, really try and keep up to date.
Yeah. And you also said play a lot of different decks. I can also kind of attest to that it helps you to know that deck's weakness. So if you're having trouble against a certain deck, I know you guys are supposed to be the ones giving advice, but I would say play the deck that is giving you trouble and try to break down what it's weak against so you know how to attack it.
Yes, yeah, I'll just exactly. Give that one. So play the deck that's giving you trouble, Ryan, and that will help you so you'll get a chance. So Ryan, you're going to have to go and play some Counterspell decks.
I'm going to have to play every other deck, because every other... I shouldn't... Yeah. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a great piece of advice, because as I said, for me, I was playing predominantly blue white control, and I think I've gone from one side to the other. You know, I've played Inverter. I've also, you know, played Lurus Burn to success as well. Even though I hate burn strategies, it was putting up crazy results. I had to just try it out, and you know what? I think I went 10-0. In two leagues with it, and I was like, this deck is insane. But before I knew it, I went to play a challenge, and I got faced up against Lurus Gun twice and went 0-2 and decided that was enough for me. So yeah. But yeah, it helps a lot. Figuring out what it's like from the other side helps so much.
Alright, so I guess one more thing, maybe one or two more things that I wanted to ask before we wrap this up. So we already talked a little bit about the tips and advice, but let's talk about resources. So what kind of resources can a player use to sharpen their skills? Like you were talking about finding a team and, you know, playing gauntlets and, you know, talking with your play partner and stuff. So like, where can somebody go to kind of do these things? Where do you, what are their best resources?
Oh. For metagame, for an idea of like top performing deck lists and metagame, I would say MTG Goldfish is easily the most, you know, user friendly site to figure out the metagame breakdown, and you know what archetypes are performing, because you can also view recent events in MTG Goldfish. So you can see if there's any interesting spicy decks, you know, that are doing well. Mm-hmm. I'd also, you know, I'd recommend following, you know, players on Twitter. One that sticks out in particular that plays a variety of different decks, although they tend to go towards Inverter. However, they have played, you know, hardened skills and other strategies before, is Daniel Goatshull, otherwise known as Ghoul Ducat. So his Twitter handle is @Ghoul_Ducat. So GULDUKAT. He provides a lot of really interesting content and good resources to give you ideas into what strategies to play in the format. Shamelessly plug, you can also follow me on Twitter if you want, at MartinPorter13. I tend to post a lot of 5-0 deck lists. However, you know, if anyone ever wants to ask me a question in the comments of any of my posts, I'm more than happy to oblige you and give you an insight into, you know, why I decided to play this strategy, why I think, you know, the strategy might be good for any given tournament. And yeah, there's also some other players that kind of, they have, you know, specialist strategies. There's a guy called Daniel Antoniou, who's from Cyprus. He tends to play a lot of Boros Feather, so he's quite a good person to follow. And then you have other kind of more well-known players. I know that Emma Handy, they tend to play a lot of Pioneer from time to time, and they'll you know, post deck lists on Twitter quite regularly. And most of the pro players as well, all like MPL players, Canister, he's another one. They will play a lot of Pioneer. I think he tried Bant Yorion, and then he's played 60 card Inverter again. So that was an interesting take, deciding not to play Yorion. So yeah, there's a lot of players. Sites are Spikes. Reddit Spikes is another place. Occasionally will have relevant Pioneer content. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
What about Pioneer deck list? Do you guys follow that website? Or not, sorry, that, yeah, Twitter handle? That one. They post the 5-0 deck list. Do you think that's a relevant how could I say, Twitter accounts for people that are trying to kind of understand the metagame or to become better players?
Yeah, I do think so. Yeah, you're almost leading me into how I kind of usually wrap up the show, although we don't have to do that just yet, is shouting out our own podcast is certainly a place to we do, you know, we're not always competitive only, but we do certainly talk about whenever the competitive meta is really changing. There's also a really good Discord attached to the Reddit MTG Pioneer. There's a Discord attached to that Pioneer. That always is tracking we've got a guy on there that really posts all the 5-0 lists, and I almost feel like it does a better job than MTG Goldfish as far as tracking that. So that's usually where I go to for the meta. So that's a great place. You can also find our own Discord.
So I think I'm kind of happy with this discussion. I don't know if there's anything else you guys wanted to add. We could talk about a few more things, but I think we covered most of it. I mean, is there any, actually there was one more thing that I was talking with Martin about that we could kind of add in to the end of the show. On Monday, they are going to make an announcement about companions, and I thought this would kind of be fun to have everybody kind of make their prediction about what you think is going to happen on Monday and how it will affect Pioneer. Are you guys game for that?
Sure.
Yep.
So who should be, do you want to go first then, Harry?
Yeah, for sure. So I think they're going to errata companion, and I think what is going to happen is you are required to draw your 7 cards, reveal your companion. You may replace the companion with one card in your hand. That card in your hand then goes to the bottom of your deck. I think, I think they've vastly underestimated the deck building restrictions required to make having an extra card in your hand from the start and a guaranteed very much playable strong card in your hand from the start an equal footing with a deck that does not have that access to that extra card.
And then you could Thought Seizes.
Yeah, exactly. Like Garuda combo, the reason why Garuda combo is so potent is you can't Thought Seize Garuda out the player's hand. Like, that's just nuts.
I think that'd be a pretty elegant solution. I think that's better than, you know, I've heard plenty of people just being like, oh, you start with 6 if you showed a companion. That's different from what you just said, and I think that's yours is probably better. The one I've heard as like maybe rumored or suggested would be instead of being able to cast it from the sideboard, you can pay 3, put it into your hand. So no matter which one it is, you pay 3 and you can put it into your hand during the game. So that would be a big nerf, I think, to Lurrus especially. I don't think it would kill companions entirely, but it would make all of them a lot more, you'd have to actually think about it.
So that would kind of force Lurrus into more of like a mid-rangey build than where you're playing it later in the game when you have that extra mana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, I'm still not sure about that because I just think, you know, pay 3 to put Yorion into my hand, and I'm thinking, is that a massive nerf that still doesn't make the card, you know, format warping the way it is just now? It's really
Yorion
difficult.
Would still be scary. That's I think the one that wouldn't mind that too much.
Yeah, I personally just think the only way, if they don't want to ban the cards, they have to get rid of this idea that you can have an extra card in your hand from the start, because that's the fundamental flaw with it, is you're basically starting with an 8 card hand. And even when I was playing 60 card inverter, I felt like as soon as I mulliganed, I'm 2 cards down already. It's just so powerful.
So what do you think, Ryan?
Actually, I didn't put too much thought into this. I was going to go with, starting 1 card down, but you already kind of talked about it. So I liked your guys' answers a lot more than just minus 1 card.
Okay, so that's kind of going to wrap us up. So I'll just quick go over, if you guys didn't hear, we are at MDG Pioneer on Twitter. You can find us on Reddit as well with that. And that has always links to our show as well as to a Discord there, which is MDG Pioneer related, and one for our show, which is the First Pioneers podcast.
And then you guys can find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, which is Yoschwenky. My website is www.thejapanhobbyist.com if you want to read there. And Martin, do you have any shout outs? Do you have any promotions? Like, what would you
anything
like?
Anything interesting going on in your life you want to talk about right now?
nothing too interesting. I will say, if you're looking for more Pioneer content, and you're looking for some lists to, spike your enthusiasm, then follow me on Twitter at MartinPorter13. My Twitter handle is just that. Also, I'm part of a team called Vanquish. We are looking to get our Twitter up and running. We will be providing various articles on multiple different formats. So, yeah, just keep a lookout for that. And, yeah, once again, thanks very much, guys, for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on. It's been a very, enlightening discussion.
Thanks very much.
Yes, great to meet you. Great to have you on the show. I think this was enjoyable. Hopefully you guys learned something and that this is what you guys want to hear. If not, we talk different Pioneer topics every week. And we are the First Pioneer Podcast. We keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer.